Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. First Platoon by Annie Jacobson is a non-fiction account of modern combat that follows an elite team of U.S. Army Rangers during the early years of the war in Afghanistan. Known for investigative reporting on national security, Jacobson uses interviews, field reporting, and declassified or publicly discussed operational context to show how a small unit fights, survives, and makes decisions under extreme pressure. The book highlights how war changed when intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance systems began to fuse biometrics, signals collection, and real-time data into what the military calls identity dominance. Rather than focusing only on weapons and tactics, the narrative emphasizes how operators locate and confirm human targets, how rules and politics shape missions, and how uncertainty persists even with advanced technology. Readers see the friction between the promise of perfect information and the reality of split-second judgment, human error, and moral weight. It is both a ground-level story of a platoon and a broader look at how the United States adapted to a new kind of war. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a Ranger platoon as the lens on 21st century war, the book centers on a single platoon to make a sprawling conflict understandable at human scale. By tracking the preparation, deployment, and repeated missions of an elite unit, the narrative shows what modern war demands from small teams: endurance, disciplined violence, teamwork, and a capacity to switch instantly between routine waiting and intense action. The platoon lens also reveals how the smallest unit becomes the place where national strategy turns into personal risk. Decisions made in distant headquarters arrive as mission packets, priorities, and constraints, and then must be executed in terrain, darkness, weather, and chaos. The story highlights the tight interdependence of roles inside a platoon, from leaders who interpret intent to specialists who handle communications, weapons, and medical emergencies. It also emphasizes the psychological burden of operating in a persistent threat environment, where every village, vehicle, or doorway can be both ordinary and lethal. Through this unit-level view, the reader gains a practical understanding of why training, trust, and repetition matter as much as hardware, and why modern conflict remains fundamentally shaped by the human beings who enter rooms, walk patrol routes, and make choices when information is incomplete. Secondly, identity dominance and the rise of data-driven targeting. A major theme is the shift from hunting an enemy defined by uniforms to identifying individuals across networks. The concept of identity dominance describes the effort to collect, store, and exploit biometric and biographical data so forces can distinguish friend, foe, and unknowns, then link a person to prior events. The book explains how this approach changes operations, raids, and patrols become information gathering as much as direct action, and the objective often includes capturing devices, documents, and biometric samples that can be fused into databases. This produces a feedback loop in which each mission is meant to improve the next mission, building a map of relationships, patterns, and suspected identities. Yet the narrative also underscores that data does not eliminate uncertainty. There are false matches, missing context, and adversaries who adapt by changing phones, using couriers, or blending into civilian life. Identity dominance therefore becomes both a powerful advantage and a source of new risks, including the danger of overconfidence in technical confirmation. The book frames this transformation as a defining feature of post-9/11 war, where success is measured not only in territory held, but in the ability to attribute actions to people and to dismantle networks over time. Thirdly, the kill chain from surveillance to split-second judgment. The narrative lays out how modern missions rely on a chain of detection, identification, decision, and action that integrates sensors, analysts, commanders, and operators. Surveillance platforms and intercept capabilities can locate activity, but converting that activity into a lawful and accurate target requires multiple steps, each with its own limitations. The book describes how a platoon experiences this system as a mix of support and pressure. On one hand, external intelligence can cue teams toward a compound, a route, or a person of interest. On the other hand, once a team is on the ground, they confront realities that no feed can fully capture: a child in a hallway, a confusing layout, local customs, and unexpected movement. The result is a constant negotiation between procedure and instinct. Rules of engagement, positive identification standards, and command oversight shape how force can be used, but the last moments often depend on individual restraint and speed. The story stresses how time compresses in close quarters, where communication delays and incomplete pictures force operators to interpret intent in fractions of a second. It also shows how after-action reviews and intelligence exploitation attempt to learn from each outcome, refining future decisions but never removing the moral and tactical weight of the moment. Fourthly, Combat realism, fear, loss, and the cost paid by small units, beyond tactics and technology, the book focuses on the lived experience of soldiers in a high-tempo environment. It portrays how fear becomes a constant background condition rather than a single dramatic event, and how teams develop rituals, humor, and discipline to keep functioning. The narrative confronts the physical costs of combat, including injury and death, and how those events reverberate through a tightly bonded group. A platoon is small enough that every loss is personal, and the absence of one member changes the unit's rhythm, capabilities, and confidence. The book also examines the cognitive strain of repeating dangerous missions with limited sleep and uncertain progress. Even when operations succeed, the emotional aftereffects remain, because success can include violence at close range and morally complex outcomes. The story highlights the importance of medics, leadership, and peer support in keeping a team effective, while also acknowledging that resilience has limits. This focus on cost is not presented as abstract sacrifice, but as the accumulation of moments that shape identity, memory, and relationships. By grounding modern war in the consequences carried by individuals, the book counters sanitized narratives and invites readers to consider what is demanded of those asked to fight in the name of national policy. Lastly, strategic ambiguity and the gap between battlefield wins and war outcomes. The book uses unit-level success to raise a larger question: how do repeated tactical victories translate into lasting strategic results? Ranger raids can remove threats, capture intelligence, and disrupt networks, but the broader war includes governance, local legitimacy, and long-term stability, areas that cannot be solved by kinetic excellence alone. The narrative highlights how soldiers often operate with limited visibility into the full political context, even as their actions are shaped by shifting priorities and rules. This creates a tension between clarity at the mission level and ambiguity at the campaign level. The focus on identity dominance further illustrates this gap. Building databases and targeting individuals can degrade insurgent capability, yet it may not address the drivers of conflict, and it can also create resentment if civilians experience raids, detentions, or intrusive screening. The book also explores adaptation on both sides, showing that adversaries learn quickly, making progress uneven and sometimes temporary. Through this theme, the reader sees how modern war becomes an endless contest of learning systems, where technology and elite training can produce impressive outcomes while still leaving the ultimate direction uncertain. The result is a sobering portrait of complexity, in which the platoon executes with precision, but the meaning of that precision depends on strategic choices beyond the platoon's control. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want a serious, ground-level understanding of the Afghanistan era and how elite U.S. forces actually operated, including students of military studies, national security professionals, journalists, and civilians trying to make sense of post-9/11 wars. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening media literacy around conflict, replacing vague assumptions with a clearer picture of how intelligence, rules, and human judgment interact under pressure. The focus on identity dominance also offers a practical framework for thinking about the wider world of biometrics, surveillance, and data-driven decision-making, issues that now touch policing, borders, and everyday privacy debates. Compared with many war books that lean heavily on memoir voice or broad policy arguments, First Platoon stands out for combining a cinematic unit narrative with an investigative lens on the systems behind the firefight. It connects what happens in a doorway or on a rooftop to the databases, analysts, and command structures that shape those moments, without reducing the story to technology hype. For buyers choosing among modern war titles, it offers both visceral immediacy and conceptual insight, making it a compelling and informative addition to a serious nonfiction shelf. If you would like to support Annie Jacobson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.